Welcome to the Book a Week podcast, jointly hosted by the SEPT University Library and the Center for Research on Architecture and Urbanism.
My name is Bhavan Shukla, and I'm your host for today's episode. Join me in a conversation with architect Snehal Shah as we talk about the book Footprints of Vishwakarma, Studies in Indian Sculpture and Architecture, authored by late Professor Dhaki and edited by Snehal Shah. Hello, sir. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Just to start off the conversation, there's a very famous quote by E.H. Carr that I'm sure you know about, where he says, study the historian before you begin to study the history or study the facts. It is in this light that I wanted to ask you about the first question, that how did your journey with Professor Dhaki begin and how did it manifest in this book?
Thank you. E.H. Carr is one of my favorite authors, and I wrote an article many years ago called Five Essential Readings for Architects, for students. And one of the first book that I put is E.H. Carr, What is History? So I totally agree that first you have to study the history. And in fact, every time you have to study the history. Now, before I go and talk about my journey to Dhaki, how Dhaki came in my life is very also important. Dhaki was working as an assistant in Archaeological Survey of India in Porbandar and then in Gujarat, Ahmedabad. And he started working on Maitrak and Sendau temples of Gujarat, which is on the Saurashtra side. Those research that he had done was seen by that time late Dr. Stella Cramlish. And she was tremendously impressed. And she insisted that this book should be published as soon as possible by one of the finest press in the world in Switzerland, in a place called Ascona, called Artibus AZI. Artibus AZI is one of the finest publications that I know. And every publication is of a quality. It's like when you read a book from MIT Press, it is of a quality. Otherwise, they will not print it. So same way, Artibus AZI published the book of Dhaki called The Maitrak and the Sendau Temples of Gujarat, which was highly appreciated by the scholars all over. And this book, because it was Artibus AZI, somehow was bought also by Architectural Association. We are back in 1969-70.
Okay.
I joined Architectural Association as a student in the master's program of history and theory course. And as one of the things that I was doing an assistantship in library, and where I had to sort out the books. And while sorting it out, I was putting some books and I came across a very small section of India at the AA in London. And there I saw this book called Maitrak and Sendau Temple. And to my horror and surprise, from 1970 till 1981, the book was never issued once. But I can understand, why would somebody in London, when he's in the midst of Renaissance and Baroque and Neoclassical, and of course modern movement, would be interested in a very small fraction of Gujarat, which not even people know about, called Maitrak and Sendau's dynasty of Gujarat, which is around 8th century. So since I was the assistant, I went to the librarian and then went to the secretary and said, since nobody has issued this book in last 20 years, why don't you sell it to me?
Yeah.
And I'll be happy to buy. So they gave me this book
and
wrote it that this has been given by AA and the book belongs to me.
Wow.
That's how I came to know about Dhaki way back in 1980-81. In 87, when I returned back to India, I've been working with Dr. George Mitchell. And that time I mentioned about Dhaki. George had met Dhaki maybe once or twice in Banaras at the American Institute of Indian Studies. And George Mitchell, who is a very prominent author on Indian temple architecture and on India as well, he also is a very great human being because he likes to introduce people. So he says, Snehal, I must introduce Professor Dhaki. And the good news is that he's from Ahmedabad and he's going to stay at his brother's house, which is just next to your lane.
Okay.
So I go and meet Professor Dhaki one fine day in 1987.
Wow.
And from that day, we just clicked.
Yeah.
I've been going to American Institute of Indian Studies twice in a year for 1 week and study there. I will stay at Dhaki's house. And he lived very, very modest is even a better word, like an austere, like a saintly life here. And he would get up at every day 4:30 and start working on his paper, start writing. And at 10:30, when he goes to American Institute, he will sleep on the sofa that is just sitting there.
Yeah.
That's the sofa office. Yeah. That he bequeathed to me.
Yeah.
That's the sofa I would sleep.
That's there. You have mentioned
in the book.
Yes.
So I would go to American Institute every year, twice, two weeks, 1 week and second week.
Yeah.
One week I go after 6 months again another week, and I will read at the American Institute of Indian Studies. Now, before I talk about Dhaki, let's talk about American Institute of Indian Studies. In 1960s, when India had a famine, we had no grains, Nehru requested America to give us the grain. Now, against the grain, we could not give dollars. So Nehru decided to give in Indian rupees. I remember it was something like in the tune of 28,000 crore then.
Mm.
The check I've seen,
mm.
which is put up at the American Institute.
Yes.
With that money, because it's Indian money, they had to spend in India. So they founded American Institute of Indian Studies, which is talks about music, art, architecture, everything. So art and architecture, Dhaki got involved in a lower level, like a researcher. And by the time he retired, he was a director. But then slowly, he started compiling books and photographs of several, or more or less, all the sites of India, of the temples that you see. And from there, he started thinking about the whole project of Encyclopedia of Indian Temple Architecture, which is one of the finest documents that we have on Indian architecture. So when I would go there, I would read those encyclopedias. Now, those encyclopedias are very difficult to understand. It will take, even today, if I have to read a page, it will take me an hour and a half, or maybe more. Because diacritical marks, Sanskrit terminology, glossary of the words that you have, which is very, very difficult for students of architecture to understand quickly.
True.
So from 2016, kind of 2016, say 2005 onwards, he had no place to work yet. And we requested him that, why don't you come and work in our office? So that time we put his secretary, who has been working with him for the last 40, 45 years, somebody called Mr. Venkat Vardhan from Chennai, Tamil Brahmin. We relocated him from Tamil Nadu and he came and worked with us. We worked out all his terms and conditions. Every afternoon he would come and sit here. But in the process, I would sit with him and talk.
True.
And I've made a notes of all the talks, not only about architecture, often on Renaissance, Romanesque, Gothic, on ghost stories, and also something about food and culture. Because this is what, and he would read even that time around 8 newspapers a day. And he would have tremendous knowledge of general art and architecture and culture, of course.
Yeah.
So that's how my relationship started. So those 9 years have been one of the finest years of my life. And he actually said once that my last years were the best years of my life. He liked young people.
Yeah.
So the rule was that all the trainees of my office have to spend time with him.
Nice.
And the trainees would sit with him and spend time.
Amazing. Amazing. So that's a very beautiful introduction and gives us nice insight into the life and modesty of Professor Dhaki. Can you tell us a bit about the key themes and ideas that you've sort of explored in this book?
Yes. Thank you. Now, this is a very interesting question, because I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
To edit a book is not an easy job.
Yes.
Because you have to, as you said, you have to think like an author who have done the work. Also, it is very difficult because author is not there and you're putting it
true.
To the public or true. To the larger readership. So when he was in his last years, he was looking at all his papers, which he wrote maybe in 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, in 2000. All these articles that he wrote, and then he was researching again and again. this is one of the finest quality a scholar should have, that he never lets the project go. Mm-hmm. Even the article is written, he keeps it researching even after it is published. One day I asked him, what are you doing, sir? He says, I'm reading my article and finding the mistakes. I said, how can that be? He said, no, wherever the research got lapsed, because in 70s I read some book, in 80s and 90s I read some more books, I got more reference, so I should have written it this way, my dating is not correct, I should have added this images, I should have talked about this issue, rather than just, you know, not mention it at all. So I said, then what will you do? He said, then I will put it together, and they should be title as Footprints of Vishwakarma. We are the Footprints and Vishwakarma both are glossary at the back, is exactly explained what it means. And he couldn't complete the work. So on his deathbed, where I was with him around a day or two before, he said, Snehal Bhai, I'm going to give you my unpublished manuscript and I would request that you publish it when I go. So in 2016 when he died, I was also very shocked because in the same year I also lost my mother just in 2 months. So it was very sad situation. But then what we did, that we started looking at all the articles that Dhaki had said. There were 9 articles Dhaki talked about.
True.
In Footprints of Vishwakarma, which we started reading. Now, when I started reading, I realized that it was so difficult to understand myself. And working in my own office, it was not making any sense. So I took a 1 month off twice from the office alone, and I went and stayed in Kerala, just read whole day from morning till night. I would read the article and reread the article and again reread the article. And with this, I kind of made lots of notes that where things are missing. Missing is not in terms of information, but in terms of illustrations, in terms of visuals. That because when he was doing in 1970s, 80s, American Institute Archive of Photo Archive was not very good. They were building it up, you know, over the period. And as the funds came every year, they would kind of scatter the sites. So suppose if they are doing an article in Gujarat, they wouldn't have visited Gujarat. So the photographs that they were there, they would use the photographs from, you know, whatever sources available.
True.
So then he had better pictures. So what we did, I sat and read all of them and worked out exactly where this illustration can be. Now, since it was Dhaki, all the illustrations were available at American Institute of Indian Studies. So after my 2 months, 1 month and 1 month stint at the Kerala, I went and spent time at Delhi. Sat in their library, in a photo archive, and got all the added photographs. Because when the article was published, the photographs were not sufficient.
True.
So we added the photographs, we kind of shortlisted those. And then again edited, because there are so many pictures we couldn't even talk about.
Yeah.
So we re-edited them, reclassified them and added the pictures here. But nothing has been changed from the text. So the whatever text is there is exactly what Dhaki has left.
Absolutely.
But then as your first question you said about theoretical position. I said, then there has to be an article. What does that article mean to Dhaki?
Yes.
Suppose what he's talking about Nandi or he's talking about Pete, means the plinths in the Java.
True.
Why would a scholar of this stature talk about, you know, Nandi images in Indian temple architecture? And that is what I thought we should have, just one page, very just this initial. One day somebody can do more research about theoretical position of Dhaki.
True.
That what does it mean to talk about Nandi, and why should he talk about Nandi as a scholar, and that Indians should learn and know about this aspect of Indian temple architecture. Or he was talking about the sculptures, images that he was very fond of. So there is this article that he was very famous. He's very fond of, called Chola sculptures.
Correct.
Chola sculptures are one of the finest sculptures that we have in India.
Yeah.
As they say, both Chola sculptures and the Ajanta paintings, there is no predecessors and there is no successor.
Yeah.
Because somehow a guild came, guild did it, and probably guild kind of vanished.
Yeah.
So Chola sculptures is what, and the photograph is there at the back of a Chola sculpture.
Correct.
So Dhaki started doing all this work at the same time talking about Indian temple architecture. So I thought we have to add one page on every article, what that article meant.
Yes.
And at the same time, this book is not only for scholars, but only for students. So when what we did, that everything when it starts, we put a map.
Yes.
And all the images, all the sites that Thapi talked about, we put in two colors. One is red, which are important sites.
Correct.
And other mentioned sites. Now, important sites and mentioned sites is my contribution. Thaki has talked more about certain sites. I consider them as important. And Thaki would consider less important. He has mentioned it less.
Yeah.
So all the articles would have an introduction of what we believe as theoretical position. Why would he be interested on plinths, the temple plinths in Java or Nandi images or Chola sculptures and the sites.
Yeah. Absolutely. And this is a... this is a beautiful transition into the next part that I wanted to ask you about, and it's a hypothesis. It's a and I would like your opinion or your thoughts on this and that. That one thinks that in order to understand, let's say, Greek or Roman architecture, one has to understand Greek and Roman sculpture or their pottery or their stories or mythology. I think with architecture too, if one really wants to get into understanding Indian architecture, one has to look into Indian sculptures, art, and mythology, and which is why the book sort of talks about the Nandis and the sculptures of Chola Empire and so on and so forth. I think this connection is, if you could share some of your thoughts on that.
This is a difficult question. I'll tell you, what Thaki meant is that Indian architecture should be seen, or Indian temple, if I say Hinduism, should be taught in a comprehensively. So, lots of articles that he has written about called Vastu Shastras, or texts, the textual sources on Indian temples. And there were two types, as we say, one is the northern Indian style, second is southern Indian. So, it's called Nagara and Dravida style. So he learned himself Sanskrit, read all this text, and he read and interpreted, because you see they were written in 14th century. Now that also one has to interpret what it actually meant. And then he realized that Indian architecture was taught, or the most important in any architectural explanation is terminology. We call it glossary.
Correct.
That is not a single good book in this world published without a glossary at the back.
True.
Or a vocabulary.
Yeah.
And vocabulary is as very important as, Bhavin, you'll understand that if I keep on saying, you know, the thing at the bottom, at the bottom, at the bottom, the moment I say sill, it makes. Or I say on the top, and I say the finial.
Yeah.
But Thaki said the right word is, it's not finial.
Yeah.
It's the amalaka.
Okay.
Now, if you read Sanskrit, it exactly explains this word, you know.
Yeah.
And this, he believed that Indian architecture was invented or developed.
Mm.
Both the genesis and its development of Indian temple architecture,
sure,
the basis was Sanskrit.
Correct.
So the textual sources were Sanskrit. So one has to talk about Sanskrit terminology.
Correct.
So that is one contribution of Thaki, that we were looking at Indian architecture, unfortunately, with Western eyes. Yeah.
Mm.
That plinth, superstructure, middle structure, or they used to call shikhara.
Yeah.
Shikhara is like yoga. It's very, it's a very long version of Hindu Sanskrit word.
Sure.
It's called shikhara.
Yeah.
It's a yoga. So one first contribution of Thaki is Sanskrit terminology.
Correct.
Second, that you talk about sculpture and architecture,
yes,
or general. Because Indian temples are maybe smaller in size compared to Gothic churches that he always often mentioned. But it is full of all these imageries, iconography. And those sculptures become part of architecture. Because as sometimes people have often remarked and researched, that there were two parallel guilds work together.
Mm.
One guild made the temple, another guild made the sculptures.
True.
So, and we know several examples in southern India where the niches were made exactly identical, but the sculptures are bigger or smaller. So sometimes they just left the gap, and sometimes they cut the feet.
Mm.
because they couldn't adjust the sculptures, because sculptures were done at Guild 1, which is maybe in Kodaikanal, for example, and Guild another worked at Mysore, and the temple was done somewhere in Trichur, you know. So like that, this happened every time. One of the things that Dhaki talked about is that, and that one day a research can be done on these Nandi images.
Yes.
Now, if you look at the chisel marks, because some Nandis that he is putting, which are unfinished. I said, why are you putting unfinished Nandis? He says, one day somebody has to do a research that there must have been same guild who worked on this Nandi and probably also worked on those Nandis. Because probably they made so many Nandis that they got smarter. The page number 138, if you can see the Nandi, 139, whereas the Nandi is kind of unfinished.
True.
And this unfinished is a very good word that I also use in my studios in SAP.
Yes.
That it was also done by one of my another very good professor called Robin Middleton. When a book was to be done to felicitate Robin Middleton, which was edited by Barry Bugdol, who was the director of Museum of Modern Art in New York. It was called Fragments, Unfinished.
Okay.
So, and then he talked about unfinished. Corbusier's work is unfinished.
Yeah.
Kahn's work is also unfinished. Doshi also doesn't finish the work.
Sure.
So, similarly, Dhaki also had this another either romantic or nostalgia about unfinished.
Yeah.
And he said this unfinished is the one that should tell you. It's like looking at ruins the way Piranesi looked at. And the third that we have to also talk about that how Indian temple architecture evolved. For example, southern Indian style, if we look at the Dravida style, we know that earliest temple to the late temples, which they got bigger and bigger, say one of the biggest is Madurai or Tanjore. He talked about how it all developed, and then for that, because the temple got larger, they also had to talk about images larger.
Mm.
Now, images to make larger, it's not so easy because your ornaments go larger, your everything, your feet gets larger. So, Indian guilds had to rework on this.
Correct.
And that's also mentioned, he talked about in Chola sculptures, that what should be the size of a Chola sculpture. So, every time if you have put a Chola sculpture, we have put the size also, because that's also as important to kind of talk about. So the size sometimes decided, sculpture size decided the temple, or the temple decided the sculpture size, vice versa.
Yeah.
So there can be many ways you can look at it, that why Dhaki talked about sculpture and architecture and what is its relevance to us.
This brings us to the last bit of the conversation. Any specific example or a case study that you think particularly stands out from the book?
Yes. I can tell you, I mean, of course, all 9 articles are one of the finest, but one article specifically is, according to me, one of the finest research in terms of intelligent, in terms of original, in terms of, you know, I'm kind of thinking about what architecture is, and basically what it must have happened. Because so many times when the researchers talk about architecture, they kind of twist images. They twist the fact, like E.H. Carr talks about. What we should be knowing, or what we should know, is what actually must have happened.
True.
How it must have happened.
True.
And for that, there's one article that I am very fond of, is article number 7 called Genesis and the Development of Marubujira Temple. Now, if you look at that article, it is very good example where I put 2 more pages and I put a map of Gujarat and part of Western India. And this is his original research. He says that there were 3 styles that took place. First is on a bottom, which is in a purple color, called Saurashtra style, which is the one that is a Maitrakan Sindhava style. Because the style had no potential, it was not worthy to be developed further, it slowly died.
Okay.
Because it didn't have that finesse, that grace, graciousness, whatever. But similarly, after the 9th century onwards, there were 2 styles that started. One is in Gujarat and second is in Rajasthan.
Yeah.
So Gujarati says Gurjar.
Correct.
This is how it is mentioned in the texts, and Rajasthan is mentioned as Marwar.
Yes.
So he says Maha Gujarat, great Gujarat style, Maha Gujar style, and Maha Maru style, which is the Maha Rajasthan style. And he kind of showed how the temples developed with probably two different skills, working simultaneously in Gujarat and Rajasthan. So in Gujar Desh and Marwar. And they were making temples from 9th century to 10th century. By early 11th century, or mid 11th century, by 1050s, he worked out, he showed that the style merged. So both Marwar and Gujarat got it together.
Okay.
So instead of Maha Gujar and Maha Maru, it became Maru Gujar.
Okay.
And this is the finest research I know. It's like
an
amalgamation of two styles making the third style.
True.
So one of the ones that I put on the cover is the temples at Kiradu, which is right in the front.
Yes.
And it is still intact because so many are destroyed.
Wow.
Like Modera must have been one of the finest examples of Maru Gurjar style. But the one at Kiradu, which is what in the cover of my book, it is the style that was merged between Gujarat and Rajasthan. So Gurjar and Maru. So this was one of the finest research that he has done. So the title that he has put is also very apt. It's called
The
Genesis and Development.
Correct.
Now this is also very pertinent in our architecture as a student, because everything has to have a genesis. Like if I look at campus architecture, I am kind of becomes a genesis.
Yeah.
Or before I am, it becomes Thomas Jefferson as a champion. Because Thomas Jefferson taught Kant. And Thomas Jefferson learns from Palladio.
Yeah.
Palladio says, I learned from Rome and Roman architecture.
Yeah.
So the genesis is very important.
Absolutely.
And the same thing, how it gets developed. So this is one of the finest articles that I think every student of architecture should learn and understand how styles become mature and how they get merged.
Absolutely. Great. Thank you. Thank you, sir. Thank you
Thank
so
you.
Much.
Thank you, Bhavin.
For spending your time, taking out the time and talking to us.
Pleasure.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much.
Hope you enjoyed this episode. Do not miss to like, share and subscribe to our podcast. Available on all your favorite podcast apps.